Very good morning to you. It's 9:31. You're listening to the live reading of the Green Valley News from Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. My name is Mark DeGroft, and it's going to spend the next half hour with seeing what's happening in our world. Happy New Year to you, the first day of 2025, and wishing all of you a very, very wonderful, glorious, and happy, healthy New Year ahead. Let's see what's happening in the weather here. Today we're looking for a high of 76 degrees and a low tonight of 40 degrees. Humidity is currently at 21%. Cloud coverage will be at 14%. Winds gusting from the west-southwest at 7 miles per hour. No chance of rain today. Tonight, partly cloudy skies and tonight clear skies. And tomorrow, high winds gusting at 26 with a high of 81. Who would believe that it's January 1st here in southern Arizona? We've got some birthdays today. January 1st, want to say hello, Anna Miranda. Thank you so much for listening. Happy birthday to Linda Brickman and to Robert Weir as well, loyal listeners here at Sun Sounds. Okay, grab your coffee. The 6 to 10 day temperature outlook for Green Valley, above the average temperatures, rang in the new year as the region closes out 2024 that was quite a bit warmer than normal. National Weather Service and Tucson meteorologist John Gluck said that the Tucson area came in 2 degrees above normal for the year. He said it was also the second warmest year on record for Tucson going back to 1895. Gluck said an upcoming cold snap heading into the Midwest and eastern United States will remain east of the Rockies and won't bring us any cooler temperatures. We're going to stay well above normal temperatures to start 2025, he said yesterday. The National Weather Service expected 74 degrees today, with highs in the 70s and 80s throughout Saturday in the Green Valley and Sorita area. The monsoon was active and wet during the first half. The second half was dry, he said, adding that the last third of the year continued drier and warmer than average. We had a record warm October, and we had a record warm September, and a record warm December. And we had all of those record high temperatures for about a three-week period from late September to mid-October. We're going to start the new year above normal, and we're under a potential La Nina conditions. That hasn't been officially declared yet, but we've been pretty much La Nina-like, where that leads us to drier than normal winter, Gluck said. Our outlook for the year, we're most likely going to be above normal again. He said it's too early for the National Weather Service to have an idea about the monsoon, but says it looks like a dry start to the first 4 to 5 months of 2025. A two-year-old girl who went missing on Thursday evening was found in the desert under a tree about three-quarters of a mile from her home just west of Suarita, this according to the Pima County Sheriff's Department. The girl, wearing pink pajamas, was transported as a precaution but didn't appear to be injured, according to a PCSD spokesperson. The girl went missing just after 6 p.m. and was found 3 hours later. She'd been playing in the backyard of her home in the 6400 block of West Maverick Road, and the family lost track of her, according to the Sheriff's Department. Border Patrol, Sorita Police Department, Department of Corrections, and several PCSD specialty units helped in the search. Neighbors and social media aided in the search with law enforcement in Wrangler Ranches, an area of open desert, dirt roads, and large lots west of the Asarco Mine Complex. The State Department of Child Safety was notified, and the Criminal Investigations Division will review the case, according to the Sheriff's Department. We have a rather lengthy story here on AI, and I'm going to get to that if it's possible, because I think it's important that we all kind of understand what's coming down the pike. But I'll see if I can get to that as soon as we get to some of the local news. It's currently 9:36, and it is 44 degrees in Green Valley. When Samuel Sam Cottrell went to bed as a little boy, he'd sometimes take a flashlight and a book to read under the covers, usually Harry Potter or another fantasy book. He was quiet, he was smart, he was serious with an air of fun. That's how loved ones describe Sam Cottrell, the 37-year-old man from Oregon who was shot and killed by a Nogales police officer back on December 5th. He was extremely intelligent, his father, Wendell Cottrell, told the Nogales International on Tuesday. Cottrell's aunt, Sonia Cottrell, said that the family lost contact with him several years ago. The family hadn't managed to track him or hear news about him until the Nogales Police Department notified them of his passing. We have done very, very many searches, Sonia Cottrell said. This is how our search has ended, and it's very unfortunate. 3 weeks after Sam Cottrell was fatally shot, his family is still searching for answers. Why did the officer shoot him? Why didn't the officer try to de-escalate the situation by using non-lethal force? Nogales Police Department has shared limited information behind the December 5th shooting, citing an ongoing investigation by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. On December 5th, an NPD officer was on patrol when he spotted a man on Western Avenue wearing clothing that matched the description of a suspect in a burglary case from earlier in that day. The man, later identified as Sam Cottrell, reportedly brandished a knife when the officer tried to approach him. Sam Cottrell also reportedly ignored officer's commands, became combative and agitated, and then approached the officer. At that point, the officer fired his gun. Sam Cottrell was taken to a hospital where he later died from his injuries. NPD disclosed Sam Cottrell's identity as a 37-year-old man with the last known address in Camp Verde, Arizona. His family has said that he was 38 years old. The officer involved in the shooting was immediately placed on temporary paid administrative leave and returned to duty on December 16th. However, various questions remain unanswered pending an ongoing investigation. For instance, NPD has not disclosed the name of the officer, how many shots he fired, or how far away Cottrell was standing when the officer fired his weapon. Wendell Cottrell said his family has also received little information about what led to the shooting. What's more, he said, they haven't been able to make sense of why Nogales Police Department has been involved in multiple fatal shootings of civilians over the past few years. In his son's case, Cottrell said, officials confirmed he had no criminal record that could have raised any red flags for the Nogales Police Department prior to the shooting. Why they didn't try to use an alternative instead of going straight to the gun, Cottrell said. In recent days, Wendell Cottrell said that other family members had been taking to social media in an attempt to find some answers from local residents. By Friday, some Facebook users had shared with them a bystander video that shows a man, presumably Sam Cottrell, lying on the ground on Western Avenue, while an NPD officer struggles to stand from the ground and then continues pointing his gun at the unresponsive man. We have a lot of questions that we want answered, Sonia Cottrell said, not really knowing that's what's made it so much worse, and we just don't get it. On Saturday, after years of hoping to reunite with her son with nephew, Wendell and Sonia Cottrell said that family and friends were planning to gather in Dexter, Oregon to hold a celebration of life for Sam Cottrell. Sonia Cottrell said the ceremony would be held at the fire hall where her nephew spent countless hours playing with a family member that was trained to join the fire department. This family has prayed and prayed that Sam would come home, she said. We're just going to celebrate as Sam, as if you'd have seen him every day and heard from him every day. Sam Cottrell lived with his mother in Alaska during his early childhood. At the age of 6, he moved to Dexter to live with his father and be closer with his sets of grandparents. Sonia Cottrell remembered her nephew's personality as multifaceted, a quiet kid who had a love for pranks. One time, she recalled, Sam Cottrell and his cousin hid fake spiders in her car in an attempt to scare her. Unbeknownst to them, Sonia Cottrell was already aware of the scheme. So I get in and I come out screaming, she said, and the boys would be bent over holding their bellies laughing, we got you, we got you. Sam Cottrell's intelligence was clear too, she said. He knew how to build and repair computers, went to design school in Seattle. Around 2007, Sam Cottrell went to boot camp for the United States Air Force. He was later stationed in Japan where he got married. After that, Sonia Cottrell said, looking things to take a turn, but they got worse. At one point, he left Japan for the United States without notifying anyone. That marked his first estrangement from his family, his aunt said. While the circumstances leading Sam Cottrell to cut ties with the family were unclear, she said he had a history of battling mental health issues and depression. "I think Sam was just a lost soul in his own mind," Sonia Cottrell said. "That's just something that's going to hurt all of us for a very long time." The family searched for him for some time and was eventually able to locate him in New Jersey about 8 years ago, she said. The family asked local police to make contact with Sam Cottrell to let him know that his family was looking for him, but he reportedly told officers that he didn't want to talk to anybody. Since then, the family had continued looking for him in an effort to take him home, but there's another set of questions that the Cottrell family will likely never find answers to, such as why Cottrell had contact with his entire family. At times, Sonia said, the family worried about whether he was homeless. "He never had to be homeless, ever. Any one of us would have helped him, brought him here, helped him with that, whatever state he was in," she said. "His dad wanted him home so bad." 9:42 and change here. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Ruperto de Angel, the former Safeway employee that left paralyzed after he was stuck by a vehicle on September 20th, has been gifted a near-new electric wheelchair. "It's a really nice wheelchair, only a month old," said Bob Campbell, who received it from John and Becky Effa, who recently moved out of state. He didn't know what to do with it and said, "Hey, do you want it? My son-in-law has a truck, and we could take it, so that's what happened," Campbell said. "I saw it. It works perfectly, and my wife suggested that we give it to Roberto." Campbell went to the Villas, Roberto's home, introduced himself to Delangel. His face lit up, and he's shown a picture of it, he said. Delangel, who has been this outpouring of community support after the crash, received the wheelchair on Tuesday. "It's really nice and comfortable," he said, as he took his new wheelchair around the Villas for a test drive outside. Citing a corrupt machine keeping her from winning a statewide election in Arizona, Carrie Lake says she will not run for public office again. Lake, who unsuccessfully ran for the U.S. Senate in 2024 and governor in 2022, wants to focus on running the voice of America, not the rigors of running for elected office. "We know the movement that we have in Arizona, and I will never take that for granted, but there is a corrupt machine here that is hell-bent on making sure I never hold office," Lake posted on X. "So I won't put my family and myself through the torture of running again. I will go to Washington, D.C., return at VOA News to its glory days, and help President Trump make America great again." Lake referenced her refusal to accept past election results in the Post. She never conceded defeat in the 2022 gubernatorial election. Democrat Katie Hobbs won the race, flipping the governorship from Republican to Democratic. And while Lake thanked her supporters following her loss in the 2024 U.S. Senate race to U.S. Representative Ruben Gallego, Democrat, Arizona, she has not conceded yet. The latest announcement from Lake came days after Trump endorsed Republican Karen Taylor Robeson in the 2026 Arizona gubernatorial election if she runs. Lake defeated Robeson in the 2022 gubernatorial Republican primary. Additionally, Trump announced earlier this month that he picked Lake, who is a newsroom veteran, to run the Voice of America. "She will be appointed by and work closely with our next head of the U.S. Agency for Global Media, whom I will address and announce soon, to ensure that the American values of freedom and liberty are broadcast around the world fairly and accurately, unlike the spies fed by the fake news media," Trump told the Truth Social earlier this month. Lake pledged to have Voice of America provide fair news coverage. "It's not my job to go in there and make it Trump TV, as I said. But it's also not our job to go in there and unduly criticize President Trump. I just want to see fair coverage. I think that's what he wants," Lake told the Epoch Times in a recent interview. "When he offered me the job, he didn't say go in there and turn it into a MAGA TV. He said make sure they're fair and accurate," she added. Lake worked in news media for about 3 decades. Most notably, she was an anchor for KSAZ television in Phoenix from 1999 through 2021. 9:46 here at Sun Sounds. Ten Robeson's lifelong love of baseball began with a backyard game of catch with his father and led to 2 trophy rings and the discipline type of life. Robeson, who played the first game of catch in Columbus, Ohio, realized that he wanted to coach when he was about 8 years old, and he met a lot of great players and coaches along the way. And I was very, very fortunate to have played with a lot of great players, people in the Hall of Fame, he said. And I was not what would be considered a great player, but I was in great situations, and I was a recipient of just kind of being in the right place at the right spot. Those right places led the former pitcher to Arizona State University's 1965 roster, the year the team won the College World Series. It also led to a year playing under the famed MLB World Series coach Tommy Lasorda in the late 1960s, while he skippered the then rookie league Ogden Dodgers. Robeson, who is 79 years old, lives in Green Valley, played basketball and street football with friends in addition to Little League Baseball. That's when the first team he tried out for at age 10 picked him as a pitcher before any other coaches could get a good look at him. And by that time, Robeson's family had moved from Columbus to Phoenix. "I always looked forward to it, but I was playing sports all the time," he said. A little about Little League, "I played basketball and baseball pretty much all the way through, and out of high school I went to Arizona State." Robeson went to ASU on a baseball scholarship. He said getting the scholarship was the driving force that set him along a lifelong baseball path. "My parents were not rich by any stretch of the imagination. They were not well off," he said, "so when you get a scholarship, you go." ASU was a big name in college baseball in the 1960s. Coach Bobby Winkles received several National Coach of the Year awards during his 13-year career, leading the Sun Devils starting in 1959, and he was also the university's first varsity baseball coach. "Unbelievable," he said. "My college experience, the 3 years I was there, the 1 year I was in pro ball were amazing as far as understanding how to coach and what you always want to do is be a listener. I listened to everything and everybody and what they said, and I was able to apply it to my coaching career." Robeson pointed to Winkles as one of the great coaches that he had ever played under. Winkles had a 524-173 record at ASU, later spent time in Major League Baseball, managing the California Angels and the Oakland A's. "I think that was probably when you learned the most about the team concept. I mean, we were 54-8, Robeson said. "We had great players, but you still have to go out there and win every day. It was impressive." He then headed to Los Angeles to pursue a career in teaching after leaving ASU, but wasn't done playing ball yet. "I still had a little bit of an itch," he said. "So I went down to tryout camp in Long Beach, and it was seen by a Dodger scout, and school was just getting over for the summer. He was heading to Albuquerque for summer work to work with a friend or earn extra money. He said the scout set him up with the Albuquerque Baseball Club's manager. He took a look at me and signed me up there and sent me off to Ogden, which is the leading the Dodgers to 2 World Series titles." Lasorda ended his playing career in 1960, became a Dodgers scout until 65, and in 66 he started his 7-year minor league coaching career. In 68, Robeson found himself on the Ogden Dodgers roster playing under Lasorda, who was known for his boisterous arguments with the umpires. Robeson drove to Ogden after the Dodgers signed him and immediately got the hotel manager there. It was a phone call for him. He was told to go get on the next bus to Magic Valley, Idaho, where the team was scheduled to play a doubleheader. He said the team was already at the ballpark when he arrived on his Greyhound bus. "I wasn't in the back an inning and a half, and the umpires were canceling the game," Robeson said. He was getting his first uniform after arriving. Lasorda was arguing balls and strikes so bad that they canceled the game. Robeson ended up watching a stark naked Lasorda chewing out players in the clubhouse as his introduction to pro baseball. "The language is absolutely, I mean, using the F word every other word, just gigging everybody's grill," Robeson said. "I mean, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen, so I'm still laughing." Player Tom Pasiorek was sitting next to Robeson giving elbow nudges to get him to stop laughing before he made it worse. "I think the thing I learned from him is that being a professional is being consistent," Robeson said of Lasorda, and he was consistent. Robeson had a 2-4 pitcher as a record as a pitcher in the 68 season with Ogden. The team won the league's pennant that year, but Robeson ended the season with injuries after tearing muscles in his back. He went back to teaching after his season in Ogden. I had no money. My signing bonus was a one-month check, basically, so I went back to teaching school. When spring training came around again, he had another choice to make. He ultimately decided to continue working and making money, especially after seeing how the system worked in pro ball. I saw pink slips being handed out and lives being trashed, Robeson said, and I just said, why am I going to go from California to Vero Beach at the beginning of spring training? They give you a pink slip and I have no job and no money. I wouldn't have enough money to buy gas to get back. It just doesn't make sense. Robeson pitched some batting practice for other players from time to time at Ogden, but the baseball itch never completely left him while teaching, and that's when he got to fulfill his childhood dream of coaching. He didn't see moving from a player to coach as a shift when looking at the game overall. I was always interested in coaching, and that's why I say I was a listener. I watch way too much baseball now, Robeson said. It's amazing that my daughter and son-in-law and grandchildren haven't bought me foam TV bricks because my television, even though they're foam, would probably have a lot of holes in them. Yeah, I watch a lot of baseball. I really enjoy it. But Robeson goes beyond watching games with the fan's eye. He'll catch mistakes during a game, and he also appreciates what the Diamondbacks club is doing for the young players. He said they're talented players, but they have to show up and perform like a professional is expected to do on a team. Robeson said one lesson you learn in baseball, college or professional, is showing up and going to work each day. He said that's what made MLB Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr., who played a record 2,131 consecutive games, his favorite player. He said it was a lesson he lived by in his life, both on and off of the field. You have nagging this, or you have nagging that, or some other thing. You don't even think about it. You just go up and go to work, Robeson said. And I think that was probably the best lesson that helped me. Coming up on 9:54, I'll go ahead and get started on this AI article, and I'll finish it next Wednesday. As AI, otherwise known as artificial intelligence, further makes its way into our lives, reactions are mixed. Some are daunted. Some are optimistic. Some are eager to use it. Some are worried and ready to condemn it. Others just don't care. Gabriel Rodriguez, 22 years old, of Suarita, says AI is a helpful tool with caution. Jean Crayley, 90, also of Sorita, calls herself terminally curious and has a lot of questions. ChatGPT came out of my junior league of college. I thought it was awesome, Rodriguez said, and eventually I figured out that it had some problems. ChatGPT is a chatbot that you can interact with as if it's a real human being. Go ahead, ask it anything, simple, complex, and you'll have your answer in seconds. GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. And if you forget that, just ask ChatGPT or any number of AI chatbots out there. By his senior year at the U of A, Rodriguez had published an AI user guide for the university library's webpage. It covers the ethics and risks of using generative AI in the classroom, among other topics. Rodriguez graduated from Walden Grove High School, then the U of A in 2024 with a Bachelor of Science in Physiology and Medical Sciences. He's enrolled at the U of A paramedic program and plans to graduate this coming May. At first, my friends and I wanted to push its boundaries, see if we could break it, he said of ChatGPT. Then it dawned on me that I could use it to help with research. There's only so much time in the day, and it's impossible to read 100 PhD-level research papers and hope to find the information you need. ChatGPT was able to make that process a lot faster. It's true. Feed research papers into ChatGPT, ask it to summarize the most important points, and you have your results in seconds. Rodriguez is a student research incubator for the U of A library. University libraries have a ton of different research guides, he said. I didn't see anything on this issue, how to ethically use generative AI in your research, so I pitched the idea to my boss, Anthony Sanchez, the research incubator unit lead, and he said, that's a great idea. I took a month of research, maybe a month of web page creation, and then it was published in October of 2023, Rodriguez said. Rodriguez, who hopes to become a paramedic in the Tucson area and says medical school is on his mind, said AI research is helpful in education and medicine, but as he looked at other AI tools to aid in research, he found that there are, in fact, some drawbacks. For example, ChatGPT was trained on data up to 2021, he said. I started using it in 2022, so its responses weren't exactly cutting edge. In a way, these tools are only as good as the data they're trained on. Also, depending on where the data comes from, it can also reflect bias, and my library webpage deals with that issue. Another consideration is the amount of energy that it takes to do AI search. From an environmental factor, it does pose a problem, Rodriguez said. You can use these tools on your computer, but your computer is connected to servers in these gigantic industrial buildings, and they require a huge amount of energy to run. A ChatGPT query requires 10 times more electricity to process than Google search. This according to the International Energy Agency. The agency projects that by 2026, AI technologies will require 160 to 590 additional terawatt hours of electricity. Now, to put that into perspective, Arizona annually consumes 57 terawatt hours of electricity. According to Goldman Sachs research and analysts, data centers at the heart of AI and crypto are expected to use 8% of the total United States electricity consumption by the year 2030. It's a 3% increase from 2022. Jeffrey Baum, who's an assistant teaching professor in the Department of Information Systems at Arizona State, said there's no stopping increased energy consumption. Baum has spent years as an engineer and consultant using management science to improve executive-level resource allocation decisions. I think there could be some irony here, Baum said. We all recognize the need to be environmentally friendly, but the energy consumption is not going to slow down. So it does look like AI is with us, and there will be more to come on that, as I said, next week. That, my friends, will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News for this morning. I thank you for joining. My name is Mark DeGroft. All of us here at Sun South wishing you a very, very happy and healthful 2025.